Thank you very much for coming and for having me here. So I'm going to give an informal talk today. It's not too long. And also, if you have any questions or thoughts, just interrupt me, feel comfortable. So I will talk about some work I've done some time ago with my collaborator, Jinu Gong, on the effective field theory during the waterfall phase of waterfall inflation. So the motivation for doing this work is that several works exploit a very short period of tachyonic instability. And when I talk about tachyonic instability, I mean spontaneous symmetry breaking. And for example, in inflation, and I will focus today in hybrid inflation, there are two fields that I will explain later, and there is this phase of tachyonic instability where you go from some false value, false vacuum to some true vacuum. And during the time, the tachyonic the long wave modes, which also we call tachyonic modes, they will grow exponentially. And people exploit this period, this brief phase, to, for example, motivate models of tachyonic preheating, primordial black holes, as well. They have used it in new early dark energy and all kinds of setups that you can motivate some kind of interesting phenomenology. But this is all based on believing that the classical approximation is valid at the first stages of this tachyonic instability. And this assumes that the back reaction of this tachyonic mode is negligible during the first stages. So this is what we're going to put to the test, and we're going to use standard effective field theory methods to do this. Okay. So in hybrid inflation, people previously studied mostly the, I can call it the quantum to classical transition. So essentially how these tachyonic modes, long wave modes, grow to become classical. So there was not much emphasis on the back reaction in the initial stages. And indeed, for 20 years, this has been completely missed. Anyways, assuming the classical approximation is correct, one then can use real-time lattice simulations, these are semi-classical methods, to study, for example, tachyonic preheating. And this was done later on by Linde. So why I'm going to use effective field theory is because it's a very powerful tool to consist. What happened? Oh, sorry. To consistently study the classical approximation, or not even, it has applications in particle physics, in cosmology, and there are many methods to go beyond the leading order or beyond the classical approximation of a problem or a theory, such as a bottom-up or top-down methods. And here I'm going to use a top-down method. Okay. So what is hybrid inflation? It's a system of two fields. One is the inflaton, which is given by this kinetic term, and it has a potential here. For simplicity, it's just quadratic. And then we have the waterfall field, which has a potential which goes like a chi to the 4 kind of theory. And then there is a coupling between the inflaton and the waterfall, controlled by this parameter g. And lambda is a coupling of the waterfall field. So it is a system of two fields, and of course, gravity. Everything is coupled to gravity. Okay. So here I will describe how hybrid inflation works. Okay, I need to be able to see. Sorry. So it's too close. So because of the coupling between the two fields, the waterfall field acquires an effective mass squared. Now, early on, when the inflaton is just starting to roll, this means that this effective mass squared is very, very heavy. Okay. So the waterfall field is just oscillating around its minimum. So it just has a quadratic potential and is oscillating. So during the time, inflation is happening as normal. Now, it's the other way around. Okay, so now the inflaton is rolling, and at some point it reaches this critical value, phi c, okay, where the effective mass square of the waterfall field becomes momentarily zero. So the direction orthogonal to the inflaton becomes massless, essentially. And this is what we call the waterfall phase transition. Okay, so momentarily becomes zero. And of course, as the inflaton now continues to roll, this effective mass square is going to become negative. Okay, so we have spontaneous symmetry breaking. And in the case of a discrete symmetry, well, you can have a continuous symmetry, but here I'm choosing a discrete symmetry because I want to keep things simple. What you're going to have now is a double well potential. Okay, so the waterfall field is going to find itself. So it was before it was just rolling around here. Now suddenly find itself in an sitting on an unstable minimum, so some false minimum, and of course it's going to be kicked by quantum fluctuations and drop to the bottom of the double well potential, which is now the true minimum. Okay, so this is what is happening during hybrid inflation.
Sorry, yeah. The way you plot it is not even a minimum, it's a maximum, right?
So yeah, maximum, sorry. That is okay. Correct. Yeah. Thank you, yes, I need to correct my slide.
Technically, maximum is a false minimum, but
still. That's not a false, yeah.
Because it's not really a minimum.
It is a maximum, but it is a false minimum, yeah. You're right. So yeah, it's a maximum. So the potential changed into a double well potential now. And the, of course, the effective mass square now is negative. Okay. So this is the instability. Now, the effective field theory of hybrid inflation has many different regimes. Okay. So Cliff Burgess, Klein, and Holman studied the regime where the effective mass square of the waterfall is very large. So what you can do there is you can integrate the waterfall field out, the whole thing, and work with a single field theory, so just a theory of the inflaton, with corrections coming from integrating out the heavy waterfall field. Now, this theory, which is applicable here, is not valid once the waterfall mass, the effective waterfall mass square becomes small, and definitely when it is zero. Actually, when it is zero, there is a discontinuity in the effective field theory. So now we go to the other side. When the effective mass square of the waterfall field is negative, you have again many regimes. Now I will focus on this regime. So what we're going to do is we're going to integrate out the waterfall fluctuations because they become important. Okay, we have these tachyonic modes around this false minimum or maximum. Okay, just around here. Okay, now as the waterfall field is dropping down, when the potential here becomes very steep, the theory becomes perturbative. You have scattering of the long wave modes, and they're going to start populating the higher momenta, so you cannot treat the problem anymore perturbatively. You have to use non-equilibrium quantum field theory for this. And when you go at the bottom of at the true minimum, if you have a continuous symmetry, you can also have some Goldstone boson effective field theory if you want. But here we consider a discrete symmetry. So, I'm going to integrate the waterfall fluctuations out because they become important. And we focus at the initial stages of the instability. So I'm going to break the waterfall field down to some classical value and some fluctuations. And I'm just going to essentially, just to, in one line, say what is happening here. I'm just calculating the one loop correction. Okay. So that's all I'm doing. And from this, I'm going to get the effective potential. Okay, so I'm integrated all these modes out, and what I'm getting is the leading order contributions to the potential plus some corrections that come out from having integrated out the fluctuations. And here I need to specify, as I said, there is a discontinuity when the waterfall field become masses. Okay, and indeed, this theory is going to blow out when you try to take the mass to zero. So what people do, they do some resummation technique to try and center the effective potential at zero. So when the waterfall field is zero, the mass is zero, and the potential is centered at zero. And so this is different effective field theory from this one. It's only valid when you take this limit, but we can use it to make sure our initial conditions are correct. So this expression demands that at the transition point, the logs are small. So this is what we take from this. So now, okay, am I correct? Yeah. So as I said, we have to ensure that the logs are small at the transition. So indeed, we can tune, well, not tune really. Actually, this scale that comes because we have renormalized the theory, it's just a mass scale. We know from particle physics, this lambda has to have the same, essentially, it has to be the same order with the other scale, mass scales in the theory. So we know we can just tune it to have roughly the value of mf squared. We also know that during the transition, mf squared becomes from really large, positive and heavy, to really negative and heavy very quickly. So we can do this. And in this way, we can initially set the log argument to unity. And there is really, even if you don't, there is no big loss of generality. It's just, it makes calculations much easier. So now the validity of the perturbative expansion. So essentially, we only have perturbative control just around the top of this false minimum. And we will lose perturbative control once the waterfall field rolls towards the steep side of the effective potential. And we can see this, okay, by plotting the argument of the log. We can see that indeed, as the waterfall field is rolling, the log is going to blow. And that's when the effective potential becomes steep. So we know that we have to obey a constraint that tells us that the effective field theory won't be valid after that, and we have to use perturbative methods, non-perturbative methods. Okay. Now, another thing we need to actually be careful. Ah, I have a mouse. I didn't realize. What? Anyway. That's cool. Yeah, I have. And if anyone has any questions, no. Okay, I'm learning. So there is. I want to also mention something also that is very important. What else we find is that a part of the real contributions to the effective potential, there is also a constant imaginary part. Now that's not a problem for the renormalization, because it's constant. So we don't have to take it into account when we renormalize the theory. But it is something we need to understand, because it's going to enter into the physical quantities of the system. Okay, so why we have an imaginary part? Because we're doing perturbation theory, okay? But this effective field theory cannot account for the fact that we have a non-perturbative process happening, which is vacuum decay. So it was shown by Eric Weinberg and Wu and others that it is related to the vacuum decay rate. And indeed, in Cliff's new book, you can also find another example, explicit example with positron decay. Again, this situation where you lose unitarity and you lose probability. But it does not mean you cannot trust the effective field theory. Indeed, if you were to add an infinite amount or many more corrections, it will eventually drop out. But as long as it is small, you can trust the effective field theory. You can truncate it at one loop level, because a small imaginary part means a small real part. It means the back reaction is under control. So,
can I say, what is I now? I zero?
So I have integrated out all the quantum fluctuations of the waterfall field. And so I'm working with the classical value.
Oh, okay, I see.
That's what it means.
And can I, while you're stopping here, I can just stop and understand a few things. So, okay, so you say we integrated out the quantum fluctuations. We're not integrating out to some momentum scale. We're integrating out large momentum modes.
So you...
IR modes. ones, or I just don't quite understand.
You are only working with the zeroth mod. So that's all I can have. That's all that is left in the system once you integrate out everything.
Okay, so you integrate out the UV modes and their effect
up to a cutoff
of the infrared modes. But I guess I'm just like at a really basic level, maybe you could just say a few words on what it means to integrate out a tachyonic degree of freedom, because maybe that's just something I'm not very familiar with.
Well, the tachyonic degrees of freedom are important. So that's why you can integrate them out, because they are very important. So when we in general integrate, we can integrate heavy particles, we can integrate things that grow and become important. So it means they dominate. And because they dominate, you think of them as maybe decoupling from the system. I can't say this for tachyonic modes. You will think this for heavy particles, certainly. For tachyonic modes, I wouldn't think they decouple from the system. I don't know what's the language, actually, and that's a difficult question, thank you. And but I think the logic is they are very large, and so we're going to integrate them out and see their effect into the system, because really they should decouple from the classical dynamics. They are non-perturbative effects, something like that. Essentially, let me try. We expect that for a while, for a while we have control of the theory, of the classical theory, and the tachyonic modes should only contribute some correction to the system, and that they become important later when the EFT is not valid. Is that kind of, are you following at all?
So you define some expansion parameter, which is the smallness of the fluctuations around the top.
Yeah.
And that's an unstable point to expand around. And so you're saying that your EFT has a finite lifetime.
Yes, yes, yes.
So while that remains small, you can trust this, but it's kind of doomed to grow and break.
Yes, yes. And this is the same when we have heavy particles, we trust the EFT up to a certain point. And some mass scale, and it breaks at that point because the heavy particle becomes important and can be excited.
That's so, a bit different, because that's in terms of like energies you're probing.
Yes,
but it's a time scale.
In some way, you can think of it as time scale because, I have integrated all the momentum modes out and I only have the zeroth mode. So, yes, it is more like a time scale. Actually, it's not exactly time scale, it depends on the values of the classical field, and so it depends actually on the value of the waterfall field as it is dropping down the potential. So you can think of it as a time scale or as how large this classical value is, it's a different concept. I agree. Okay, so the system to solve, usually, it's for hybrid inflation without including the corrections, is the Klein-Gordon equation for the inflaton, the waterfall, and of course gravity. And we have to remember we are in the waterfall phase transition or spontaneous symmetry breaking regime. So the effective mass here is negative, effective mass square is negative, and therefore all I'm gonna talk does not apply to the case where it is positive, okay? So we are focusing on this regime. Now we turn on all the corrections, and because the waterfall field and the inflaton are talking to each other through the interaction term, and they're both talking to gravity, what you find is these corrections, when you vary the action, okay, because you have this effective potential now, they're going to talk to everything. So the inflaton has corrections, the waterfall has corrections, but even the gravitational equations have corrections. So indeed, the Hubble parameter here has a small imaginary part, but we understand we are trying to study the back reaction, okay? We're not trying to make any physical statements about this right now. So we just hope that it stays small and indeed it doesn't affect the system. So now we want to study the back reaction. Okay, so what we need to do is to understand what happens when the water vapor field, when the inflaton rolls down and crosses that critical value. The beautiful picture we have from Linde's work and Belido's and other is that when that happens, the inflaton slowly rolls down to its minimum and starts oscillating. So inflation gracefully ends. To have inflation to gracefully end, we need the slow roll parameter, epsilon, to grow to order one. So it is very small during inflation, and then it grows to order one. So in order to study the back reaction, we are going to study whether slow roll inflation is obeyed. Okay, because if slow roll inflation does not finish, does not end, we know the back reaction is too large. The system is broken. So what controls this is the velocity of the scalar field, because it actually tells you how quickly you go from positive effective mass squared for the Waterford field to negative effective mass squared of the Waterford field. So if we write now down the velocity of the scalar field, we have the leading order term that comes from the quadratic potential and the quantum corrections. And what we see is that this can be the same order of the leading order term unless we impose a constraint. And this is something that has been was not known for 20 years, actually, that indeed we have to make sure that the mass of the inflaton is in comparison to the G, which controls the interaction of the scalar field, obey this relation. And it will soon become clear why this is happening, why this is important, and why we should actually think of back reaction when we work with this kind of instability, systems with instability. Now, we can do various simplifications to also eventually study the back reaction to gravity. Now we find you can bring into a nice relationship, and analytically so, that the back reaction to gravity is controlled as expected. And this was also assumed in all the previous works in hybrid inflation. So there was no evidence of violating the effective field theory, at least as far as gravity is concerned. There is no large back reaction, although it would have been interesting if there was, but I can't think of a reason why.
Sorry, what is A1? You write A1 there.
So I have, let me see, where is it? So this is the leading order term. So as long as this dominates, essentially, so I have collected a lot of contributions in terms of orders in the waterfall, in the powers of the waterfall parameter. So as long as this term dominates, it contains various contributions, the back reaction of the waterfall fluctuations to gravity will stay under control. That's all that this says. So now I'm going to give you some examples. Okay, so now you can understand what is happening. Okay, so the first regime I'm going to study is called a regime with two stages of inflation, and it was studied by Klesse and consequently others. So what happens here is that you choose the parameter space in such a way that the quantum kicks that the waterfall is going to get, so that he can drop from the false minimum to the true minimum, are not going to happen this whole process is going to be smooth, essentially, so that essentially the inflaton crosses a critical value, the waterfall in that time stays pretty much constant, and you have a second period of inflation. So that's the idea, because you have pushed all the parameters to be so small, the waterfall is not getting a kick yet. It's just smoothly behaving. So if you actually studied this theory with quantum corrections, you find everything is under control indeed. The inflaton is just inflating, and inflation ends when the slow roll parameter becomes order one, and the waterfall field is just pretty much oscillating around this minimum, or just has a constant value and eventually drops So this is when it drops down to its false minimum. Now, this green line is the validity of the effective field theory, which I told you before. So this is pretty much, as you can see, halfway where the effective potential becomes steep. The reason I can extrapolate further is because the classical approximation holds. So I can extrapolate much further and show you how it drops down and is oscillating around the true minimum. But in reality, there is a lot of non-perturbative physics that take place here. So this is just a very naive extrapolation. And why this is all under control is because the real and imaginary part are very small. So this means the back reaction is very small. And you can now see that indeed the Hubble parameter is just constant as you expected. And there is no, I mean, the imaginary part is so small, it plays no role in the physics. So now we're going to look at ordinary inflation. And this is actually Linde's seminal paper on hybrid inflation. So that was the first paper on hybrid inflation. And consequently, there were many more. Okay. So he considered back in 1994, first of all, electroweak symmetry breaking, and then GUT phase transition. Now, in the first row, what you see is what everybody thought for 20 years happens. If you only assume classical dynamics and no corrections, okay? So again, as I said, it's this beautiful picture where inflation ends when the slow roll parameter becomes a border one, and that's when you expect also the waterfall field to essentially drop to its true minimum. Now, I'm going to turn the quantum corrections on, and what you find happens to this theory is absolute nonsense. So don't read anything into these graphs, because all that they are here to show is that you have broken the effective field theory. The back reaction is too large and you get absolute nonsense. So that's what it looks to break an effective field theory. So you have like negative slow roll parameters, a sine flip of the velocity, the inflaton is exploding. You have no control, you have lost control. And why this is happening? Because the mass of the inflaton is too small in comparison to the constant that controls the interaction. Okay, so for this reason, it does not obey the constraint, and which we said that it has to be obeyed for the back reaction to stay under control. So indeed, if we now enforce the constraint, we find exactly this beautiful picture again, where inflation ends when the slow roll parameter is of order one and everything is in check. And you can see here that we had to essentially change the values of the coupling constant and M so that they obey the constraint. Okay, this is reminiscent of the situation where, for example, in inflation, you have a very flat potential and radiative corrections can take control. They can become dominant. So this is a similar situation that is happening here. The quantum corrections or the back reaction takes control if your inflaton potential is too small compared to the parameter that controls the interaction. So the take-home message, okay, and I'm going to finish now, is of course care must be taken when we use a classical approximation, especially because spontaneously breaking a symmetry, even for a brief time, can lead to really nice phenomenology, but no one really checks the back reaction. People just make assumptions about it, and I think one has to explicitly do this calculation to make sure they have control of their parameter space. Now, further applications could be, so what we're going to study next is a multi-field theories where you have geometric destabilization. And this is also something that people have arguments about and is not understood well. So we hope that by treating this as a nonlinear sigma model, we can try to put also this question to rest and constrain the parameter space. So thank you for coming. Thank you.
advertised.
Yeah, I didn't want to make it too long. There's no need.
Okay, so questions, anyone online or in person? You can just raise, I'm not seeing anyone online, so anyone here.
Keep going back one slide.
Yeah, if I figure out how to use my mouse. Yeah.
Value of lambda is important. You mean lowercase lambda or uppercase lambda?
Lowercase lambda. So essentially, if you don't set it, you have to tune it a bit. Otherwise, you're going to end up having inflation ending maybe after the waterfall has gone down or has gone to its true minimum. And we don't have any understanding of this kind of physics. So we have to tune it a bit so that they both end at the same time, because that we understand. But anything else is too complicated because of the non-perturbative dynamics. So we avoid it.
So let me just try to understand that statement. So you have your inflaton field slowly rolling.
Yeah.
And then is the statement that you need to turn on the waterfall field fast enough so that, because it's still the waterfall field that's ending inflation, right?
Yes, yes, that's the whole idea here, that because it goes down to its false minimum, this is what we try to, this is what lambda essentially does, ensures that the two are coupled. So if you change lambda, you can completely decouple them as well, and they're not talking to each other, depending how large it is. And then they're doing completely different things, and it's all very confusing.
What is the statement that the classical approximation is valid when in field space we're rolling down and then we go 90 degrees right away, not some complicated trajectory, which is what would happen if the transition wasn't sudden, like if the mass didn't go negative fast?
Indeed. Yeah, because then you have no control of what is happening. Inflation might not even end. So you claim you have reheating and preheating. Well, there is no inflaton to do any of this because you just broke the system.
This is a silly question because I'm an outsider, but I just want to understand this model. So this waterfall field, is it a quantum field or an external field?
There are two fields that have a classical and a quantum part. They're just two fields. They both have a classical and a quantum part, inflaton and waterfall.
And waterfall, okay.
Yeah.
And so when you're saying non-perturbative, what does it actually mean? So why is it non-perturbative, the effect?
So when you get, let me have to go back to the potential. So non-perturbative means, first of all, that the quantum corrections blow. So you don't have perturbative control of the effective field theory of your loop corrections. Secondly, in physics, in terms of physics, what happens is once you reach this tip part of the potential, by that time, all these modes have grown a lot and they have started scattering with each other. So now you might even have domain walls or other non-perturbative effects entering the story.
The way you see it is that things just blow up in H bar. That's how you notice that this is not.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
As a cosmologist, I set it to one, so bad. I set everything to one.
So
you cannot see anything. I just take my word for it.
Thank you.
So just for clarity, so the chi zero here, if you have the symmetry, chi zero is just zero. The chi not, yeah, or what is chi?
Well, yeah, the effective potential is quadratic.
Right.
Essentially, so this is in this regime. You have a quadratic potential, and that's why this potential. So it's just oscillating around the quadratic potential. You can show it analytically.
I'm just trying to understand what happens when it's invert. So, but chi zero, is that still zero, or are you perturbing?
Momentarily. So, and this is explained by the Kalman-Zeemansky limit. You can understand it from an effective field theory point of view by taking the limit of mass, the massless limit. It's a discontinuity, though, in the effective field theory.
Okay, so it's like chi zero go to zero.
Yeah.
I guess I'm trying to understand that in original linear scenario, what was he imagining? Was he imagining that, the field is just rolling down and suddenly just turns around and go down bottom? Or what was he thinking?
So this is the original model from Linde without the quantum corrections. That's exactly what he was imagining. So inflation is taking part, then it reaches the critical value somewhere here and immediately inflation ends.
Right.
But it's consistent with the slow roll parameter growing to one. It was very smooth.
But I'm just answering, so there's the chi zero that suddenly shows up, and then phi suddenly starts oscillating. Do they have to start at the same time?
That depends on how you pick that value lambda. And that's the only case we understand in cosmology, because otherwise we lose control, or they decouple, or they behave differently.
Mm.
So
if you have a symmetry, if you're just solving classical equations, there's a symmetry that everything is symmetric around pi equal to zero.
Yeah.
So it looks like to me you would just pi to the say zero.
Well, no, because of quantum correction. So essentially, as the inflaton is rolling, you have a very heavy mass for the Waterfall field. But as it continue rolls, it crosses that value zero. And this is where you know, because it's gonna now if you just analytically compute the potential, once it becomes the next moment the mass is gonna become negative, and you know you're gonna have a double well potential. So these are disconnected regimes, actually, but the assumption is that this is all happening smoothly as inflation is taking place, and thus why I try to control the back reaction by assuming that this is all smoothly, but from an effective field theory point of view, it's discontinuous. You have different effective field theory.
From Linde's point of view, it
was smooth.
So he had a classical. Did he have quantum fluctuations in that picture or not?
So they mostly looked at it at the classical level in the original paper. I don't remember.
But then finally, it says zero all the way through, shouldn't it?
No, they understand that this that when chi when the inflaton rolls down a bit further than chi across to zero, chi will become negative. The mass square of chi is going to become negative. So they understand that then you change a potential. You change
some sort of quantum fluctuations to chi. Would roll down.
Yes, so this is all how they understand it. I did the explicit calculation to show exactly what happens in this little part of the theory I have controlled.
Okay. If there are no other questions, again, dinner tonight at 6 in the bistro, and Maria is here at her office. 254, right?
254, but most of the time I'm bugging Nayes. Yes.
Parameter. Okay, thanks everyone.
Thank you.